Hey y'all, it's Kelly Clarkson here to talk Wayfair. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app.
Get 10 for $10 on select varieties of Kroger pasta, Starkist tuna pouches, or Powerade with your card. Then get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breasts for $2.49 a pound with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the third episode now of the 76 Reasons podcast. As always, I'm Anthony Passiola, joined here by my co-host, Jacob Moreno. Hopefully, in coming episodes, we'll get some guests on here to join us, but for now, you're stuck with the two of us. To start, I want to talk about Monday's game, Sixers versus Phoenix. Jacob, I'll let you just start things off. What were your initial thoughts just watching that game?
My initial thoughts is that it was a battle of which offense was more dysfunctional, to be quite honest with you. I mean, the Suns made that starting lineup change. Bradley Beal cooked off the bench. But a lot of it was because of the Sixers' poor transition defense and lackadaisical closeouts rather than Beal being effective. But I don't want to, like, you know, completely discredit his performance. He had a really good shot selection, wasn't forcing anything. So we'll see how that continues to go for them. But as for the Sixers, I mean, it was just rough. We'll get into the whole offense without Embiid in a later segment of this episode. But, I mean, man, it was just rough. I mean, the team was playing with absolutely zero energy besides Kelly Oubre Jr., who actually, I did want to shout out, had 26 points and 11 rebounds. And, you know, his ability to drive and just collapse the defense and really carried the Sixers out the third quarter. But the whole offensive process, it was slow. They couldn't really connect. They shot 37.5% from deep. And the ready for this set? The Sixers, I believe, were outscored at bench points 56-7. And guess who had those combined 7 points? Justin Edwards and Adem Bona. That's a crazy stat.
Yeah.
Bench production, poor offense, and inability to really clamp down on Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal. They did do a good job on Devin Booker, but that was really about it. Sagging off Ryan Dunn didn't help. He had 15 points on 3-6 shooting from three. So just a complete collapse on both ends of the ball.
Look, when Devin Booker shoots 3 of 16 from the field and you still lose to the Suns, there is a problem. There's a serious problem. Holding the Suns to 109, I mean, all things considered, isn't horrid. I mean, it's not great either, don't get me wrong.
But scoring 99 on the Suns is
hard. Scoring 99 is horrid, especially on the Suns. It's funny because you talk about Kelly's performance, and all I can think about when, like, the Sixers forwards can never have a good game at the same time, which to an extent makes sense, but it's always only one of them that can play really well. I mean, Caleb didn't play bad by any means, didn't shoot the best. Paul George, we'll get into that, obviously. But
yes, next up.
I mean, you touched on the bench points, but I mean, it's just frustrating to me how only one of these X-factor forwards can play well at a time. I think Nick Nurse needs to, I don't know, find a way to put them in better positions to win at the same time.
Oh, trust me, we'll get into that soon.
Oh, God.
Oh,
all right, well, without further ado, the man of the hour, of every hour, it feels like at this point, is Paul George. In the Suns game, 5 of 18, 13 points. Jacob, tell us what's wrong with Paul George. Give us the answers.
I mean, I've tried to be very lenient with Paul George. I've tried to be understanding, as I've said on our first two episodes. Like, I've tried to be understanding, you know, early in the season, he struggled with injuries. His role's changing with Embiid being in and out of the lineup. At a certain point, his shot-making is just unacceptable. And I think that if the Sixers try to get him more looks at the rim, off pick and roll more, it would be better for that. I feel like he also needs to be utilized more off the ball. I feel like he's had a big role on the ball, which he just doesn't look to be able to consistently do in the year 2025. I mean, we're seeing just he's settling for a lot of, like, quick contested twos, and it's just not only killing the offense, but, like, he's really not making it easier for himself to establish any type of rhythm. Yes, he's still solid as a playmaker. We saw, you know, some solid results off the pick and pop with him and Yelp Slade, but that's really about it. I mean, shot making from like beyond the arc, from the mid range, is just sorely lacking. And you just simply need more in games for him as a scorer, especially, in games like these where Embiid is out. So it's really just been a rough stretch of performances. And, like we said, like I've said last episode, I don't care if he can do it against the Hornets. I want him to do it, against the playoffs caliber team like the Suns. Obviously, at Paul George's end, I'm not expecting 30 every night, but like I'm expecting better than 13 points on 5 of 18 shooting from the field.
Well, look, I'm glad you're finally coming to terms with the fact that George can't make a shot from 10 feet outside the basket. I'm always a little more negative than you, but unfortunately, you now have to come to my side, not the opposite. I was going to touch on the same point. In terms of isolation scoring, that's just not something he's capable of doing at a high level anymore. It's not like he was in OKC, even his earlier days in LA. They really do need to start using him as more of a off-ball guy, just like you said. I completely agree. 'Cause, and Sixers fans are gonna hate to hear this, but he's no James Harden in that sense. James Harden earlier in the season was leading the league in isolation scoring at however old he is. I mean, I'm sure he's not too far off from George, but I think they were just expecting more of a pure shot creator than he's been. And I mean, that segues us perfectly into what you wanted to talk about with Nick Nurse. Like, how much of the blame really does go to George at this point? Like, yes, he needs to start making shots, but Nick Nurse also isn't really adjusting and seeing different looks with him playing more off the ball.
Yeah, I mean, I've been waiting to talk about the Sixers' offensive process since the timer on this podcast segment started. I mean, the lack of creativity in the offense, especially in games without Embiid, is just inexcusable at this point. Like, from October to November, I was a little bit lenient because, there's small sample sizes. First 10 games of the
Of course,
season,
yeah.
every team in the league is trying to get their stuff together.
Right.
But it's just the offense is so predictably stale, like, especially in games without Embiid, like I said, because all it truly is Embiid, or not Embiid, sorry, Maxey and George isolating. And if not, Nick Nurse gets crazy and sets one single ball screen. That's like the only action they run the entire game, especially in the game against the Suns. It was all iso ball. And then it was just a quick pick and pop with Yabusele. And if that didn't work, Paul George or Tyrese Maxey just stole the shot clock for a contested shot. And that's all the offense has been. Like, I understand Nick Nurse isn't the most creative coach, but at a certain point, there has to be a little bit more creativity and a little bit more of a structure in games without Embiid, especially since Embiid's going to miss X amount of games in the season. So I'm just really disappointed with the lack of creativity, the isolation. Like, it's one thing to just run a lot of pick and rolls and just have that be your offense, but just to constantly iso with players who really, like Paul George, is really just not that great of an isolation scorer anymore, and Tyrese Maxey's proven to be inconsistent in that. So the offense is just really dreadful, like at times. And I think, they don't utilize Kelly as a back cutter as much as they should. I think I like what they do, obviously, with pick and pops, but like there's just so much more screening to be done. There's so much more off ball actions Paul George could get into. And if you're going to play Kyle Lowry, at least use him to his strengths as a facilitator, right? Like, let him bring the ball to the court and like set two off ball screens for
Yeah,
Maxey to get him a quick look
you would
and let the
think more
offense
than
flow there. Yeah.
anyone, you would think more than anyone, Nurse would know how to use Kyle Lowry, right? But I mean, still no. It's unfortunate because I do like Nick Nurse. I mean, I think he was great in Toronto. I mean, how do you not think he was? He won a championship, and that's what you're trying to do as an NBA coach, of course. I mean, Kawhi Leonard became the best player in the NBA by a landslide for that stretch of time, but I mean, some credit needs to, of course, go to the head coach. So, I mean, like you hit it right on again. Like creativity, just not, it's just lacking. But to me, how many better options are there out there? Like, I'm not super in touch with the NBA coaching carousel of who's around. Do you have any like guys in mind if the Sixers were to make a change sooner than later? Who? I mean, obviously Mike Brown. But maybe with the exception of that, who would you look for if you have anybody in mind?
Honestly, I'd probably have to do more research at the moment because
Yeah.
not many guys, come up to my head. But I think that the biggest thing the Sixers need is an offensive identity. And I'm not saying to fire Nick Nurse. I don't think they should at the
Yeah,
moment, to be quite
not
honest, even
yet,
though
yeah.
as questionable he's been offensively, we just, haven't really been able to see the big three intact for more than the stretch of like three games. And at the end of the day, Nick Nurse is a ceiling raising coach, and I believe that the defense has been excellent, and I think his schemes have played a large part in that. So I don't want to discredit him there. So I don't think Nick Nurse should go for the time being, but I feel like if the Sixers were, I don't think it's too realistic. But if they were to get someone like Mike Brown to almost be like the offensive coordinator and an assistant coach type role, I think that could be excellent because I think, like we said, the offense is lacking so much identity and creativity. So that would be like a dream of mine, but I don't know how realistic that is.
I mean, of course it all comes down to how fast they fall in the playoffs, right? I mean, if Philly goes out in the first round, like, I mean, he might be gone. That might be the reality of it. In today's NBA, like, I mean, just going back to the Mike Brown stuff, I thought firing him was insane, by the way. I don't know what your thoughts were on that, but I thought that was crazy. So if that's the standard that NBA coaches are being held to now, I mean, I don't see any reason why Nurse wouldn't be gone in that scenario. If they get beat up pretty bad in the first round, like if Mike Brown gets fired for that, I mean, Nurse, that's even worse than anything Mike Brown did. A 5-game losing streak and he's out the door, like that was ridiculous to me.
Yeah, I agree. I think it honestly depends on the context because if Embiid has an injury and they lose in the first round, I don't think there's
Yeah.
much Nick Nurse can do because the Sixers,
Fair.
for as long as the Embiid era has been a thing, they go as far as Embiid can take. So there, I just don't think it happens if Embiid gets injured. But if we're in a world where the players just, lose respect for him, then I think we're having a different conversation for sure. As far as the Mike Brown thing, I agree. I think the biggest thing was not playing Keon Ellis, and obviously, he's playing now. He's playing really well in DeAaron's
Yeah.
absence. But originally, I mean, I didn't think the Mike Brown firing, really fixed their issues because Sacramento, Keon Ellis or not, they really don't have a good perimeter defense whatsoever. They have a really clunky fit offensively, and those are issues that just simply, don't go away. I know they won 5 straight, but I think a lot of that has been fool's gold because they've been playing a lot of shorthanded teams. Even though they are good teams, they've been missing some key pieces. So that's kind of my thoughts on that. But another Nick Nurse thing I did want to point out is before the game yesterday, he told the Sixers media that he wants to Embiid to slightly change his shot diet, and he wants him to take 6 to 9 threes per game going forward. So what do you think about that? Then I'll add my thoughts after.
Yeah, so when you sent me that podcast topic before we started recording, I was like, what? Why does 7 foot Joel Embiid need to take more threes? He's taking 3 to 5 a game. He's hitting a decent amount. Like, what's wrong with that? What there's when Embiid is on the floor, I don't see a lot that he's doing wrong. And I didn't know the quote, 6 to 9 threes. I think that is outrageous. You know what that tells me? That tells me that you don't have enough confidence in other guys on your roster to hit shots from the outside. Because why else would he want him to up that production? Why not go to Paul George, who should be realistically taking 6 to 9 threes a game and say, "Hey, you should be doing that." That to me, that almost shows a lack of trust in a lot of the rest of the roster. That's really the first thing that pops into my mind when I hear that quote. But you can go ahead because, I mean, you know more about this situation than I do.
To add further context to it, he did say it was about more about making defenses pay for sagging off of him. I think that's probably more in pick and roll situations, but I mean, still, like 6 to 9 threes for Embiid is a
That's still
little bit
crazy.
much. But the first thing I thought is when I read it is who's going to create him these 6 to 9 open attempts per game? Because
True.
up to this point, nobody's proved to be a consistently great playmaker. Maxey's had his moments. The only time his play thing really gets unlocked is when he is passing to Embiid off a pick and roll because, hate to say it, but he has shown to be a limited playmaker this season, which is, an area I thought he'd step up in more than he
For
has been. I
sure.
mean, Paul George has been on the two-man game with Embiid, but he is a guy who also makes pretty simple reads. So, like, it's not like they have this gravitational playmaker like they like did with Harden, who's going to create him all this space to operate from the perimeter. And also, I think trying to phase out a mid-range game is a bit weird because that's how all the offense usually gets generated. Because you have Embiid who's gonna, do all his work in the mid-range, drill with fadeaways, fallaways, whatever. But he's also gonna draw defensive attention and create offense with his post touches. So I think phasing that out is weird. I think one argument is that you want to prioritize his longevity, so you want to kind of turn him into more of a stationary shooter. But that goes back to my original point: is who's gonna create the offense then? Because like we said, Paul George, Tyrese Maxey have proven to
Yeah.
not been able to be the offensive engines needed in this scenario. So yeah, that's kind of all my thoughts on that.
It's so
89% of business leaders say AI is a top priority. The right choice is crucial, which is why teams at one-third of Fortune 500 companies use Grammarly. Grammarly is the right AI assistant for your team. With top-tier security credentials and 15 years of experience in responsible AI, Grammarly is how companies like yours increase productivity while keeping data protected and private. See why 70,000 teams trust Grammarly at grammarly.com/enterprise.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Unfortunate to me that, like, I loved when James Harden was on the court and he wasn't being any sort of distraction. I loved him next to Maxey and Embiid. Like, I thought that was a great fit just all around. It kind of lets Maxey play a little more off the ball freely. He can take some of those more wild shots without having to pay miserably for it every time. And I mean, obviously, the separation created by Harden to set up Embiid for like those outside looks, like you were kind of talking about. So, to me, it is really frustrating that the Sixers have had to go through all these third options, and the ones that have fit best don't like it in Philadelphia or have problems. I mean, Jimmy, I also loved how Jimmy fit in Philadelphia, and I mean, we saw how that didn't end as poorly as the Harden stuff, but. I mean, still, it was short-lived, to say the least. I don't know what that really speaks to be honest with you. I don't know what these stars' problem is in Philadelphia necessarily.
I think there's a bunch of unique situations with Harden. We had the whole Daryl Morey fallout.
Of
and
course,
Jimmy,
yeah.
I think the team essentially, when you really read up about it, you realize the team essentially chose Ben Simmons over Tobias, or not over Tobias Harris, over Jimmy Butler.
That
but
was
the common narrative is that they chose Tobias because Jimmy ran to that after the second round in 2022,
yeah.
And that was just not the case. But like we talked about, Embiid 6-9 threes, but if that's truly the vision, we're going to have to wait to see that because Embiid is listed as out against the Washington Wizards tomorrow with a sprained left foot. And Paul George, in addition, is also out with left groin tightness. So the Sixers will be shorthanded. The Wizards are currently playing right now. And they're also very shorthanded because they're missing a bunch of key pieces, such as Malcolm Brogdon, Marvin Bagley, Jordan Poole, Sadiq Bey. And they're currently getting trounced on by the Rockets right now. So even if the Sixers win, I mean, I'm still not moved. We'll get into that a little later. It's more about the fact that Embiid and George are missing tomorrow's game. So what do you think about that? Do you think it's, you know, serious? Do you think they should, this is more rest? So
I don't really like to speculate over injuries, but from who's on the court, it's going to have to be a crazy Maxey game, even if the Wizards are shorthanded. I was going to bring this up as soon as we started previewing the game. I would love to know the Sixers' record versus teams over 500 compared to under 500, because I know off the top of my head they've got like the Brooklyn win, the four over Charlotte. So this is just another one of those cases where I think it's just a bad versus worse situation, which is what you were kind of hinting at that you'll, I'm sure, get it more into. But this win doesn't move me at all, regardless. In terms of Embiid and George being out, it would be nice if they were playing, of course, because then you kind of more lock up that win, so to speak. Without those two, there is now a chance you lose to the 6-27 Wizards without Jordan Poole, probably. Who, by the way, I mean, the Sixers are lucking out by not having to play Jordan Poole. I'm going to be honest. He's been, when he's been on and off the court recently, but when he's playing, he's playing like the prime Warriors Jordan Poole that I remember. So I think they're lucking out, in all honesty, even with George and Embiid out.
Yeah, him and Jordan Poole and Zach LaVine are having really under the radar seasons. But kind of on to your point, I think the injuries are legit because in the injury report, there was nothing about injury management. This is now, I believe, the second game Embiid has missed with this left foot sprain. The groin soreness for Paul George is a bit new. Maybe that, happened in last night's game. So we'll kind of see with that. But I understand fans' frustration, but at the same time, it's really hard, being six games below 500. It's hard to feel like that. It's hard to feel like we're in early January because with the Sixers' plan to, rest Embiid on back-to-backs, they've created like this little margin for error where every game feels like the end of the season. So going back to what I said, I understand the fans' concerns, but also do want to move into a quick piece of news today. The Sixers waived their two-way forward, Pete Nance. So now they have an open roster spot. So I'm not really sure, it's open two-way roster spot, sorry. But they do have an open roster spot as well, which we'll get into in very shortly. But yeah, wanted to shout that out real quick because now they have an open two-way slot to, acquire whoever they want. So thought that was a bit of an interesting move because PNAS offered a little solid production. So, we'll see what happens there. But that kind of led me into my other point, which is the lack of guard depth and how they could potentially use that roster spot to fill it. So real quick, what do you think about their current guard situation, the void that McCain created, and do you see any potential, ways to improve that via trade or free agency?
Yeah, so I touched on it a little bit last episode. Eric Gordon, Reggie Jackson are washed. I liked the strategy coming into the season. I wasn't against it by any means. I especially liked the Eric Gordon pickup. I expected a lot more out of him, especially just as an outside just threat, just catch and shoot threes. And I mean, he's been essentially non-existent. Same with Reggie Jackson. Of course, they're not playing that much because when they were playing more, they were non-existent. Kyle Lowry, I still think he has the capability to be a productive backup point guard facilitator. I just think, like we touched on earlier, Nurse isn't exactly using him the best. In terms of looking, now that they have this open roster spot, this is a crazy idea to throw out there, but there's a former number one pick sitting out there that the Philadelphia 76ers drafted long ago, named Markelle Fultz. Why would you like? I understand the first go around was not pleasant. From a pure fit perspective, why would you not go out and get him? Like, in all seriousness, I'll pose that question over to you, but I don't see from a fit standpoint why they don't get him.
Yeah, so I completely agree with you, but I'm going to take it a step further. I'm going to say Kyle Lowry is just simply not a rotational player. This in the year 2025, him, Reggie Jackson, Eric Gordon, they cannot crack an NBA rotation, especially a team who was supposedly supposed to compete for a championship this season. But like you said, Markelle Fultz is one of my targets that I would like the Sixers to fill that roster spot with. I made a whole article on my Substack at Six Country. Go look at that. But he, along with Dennis Smith Jr. and Lonnie Walker, were two other targets I really wanted because with Markelle Fultz getting into him first, he's a very quality perimeter defender, and he's also a solid facilitator, which checks two of the Sixers' biggest needs, especially off the bench. But obviously, we cannot pretend that he doesn't have his scoring limitations. He's still a very poor three-point shooter. Finishing is a little bit suspect. But yeah, he would check two of those boxes. And Dennis Smith Jr. is also someone with the same issues. Limited scorer, but a quality facilitator and a great point of attack defender. So I would love either of them because I think at this point, either of them are better than Reggie Jackson or Kyle Lowry at this point. But the person I want most is Lonnie Walker, who apparently the Sixers, amongst other teams, have been interested in him. Markside reported that, I believe, last week. So I think Lonnie Walker just kind of offers what Dennis Smith Jr. and Markelle Fultz don't in terms of being a microwave scorer who can, get hot from three and attack the rim. And he's also a capable defender as well. So I think Lonnie would be my first choice there. But obviously, the Sixers want to keep that open roster spot to preserve any flexibility for any moves they'll do with the deadline. So, deadline or not, I feel like it should be used depending on who they trade for. And regardless of whether it's Lonnie Walker or anyone else in the trade, the guard depth needs to be addressed because at this point, it's truly their biggest hole on the roster.
Yeah, for me, the decision on Lonnie really comes down to how much confidence Nurse and the coaching staff in the front office have in Lowry, because Lonnie does kind of lack in the facilitating department. From what we've seen, he's much more score. He's solid defender, of course, but does struggle in the playmaking department. Not his fault. He's just more of a shooting guard. That's the reality of it. So if they trust Kyle to kind of fill those backup point guard minutes still and can pick up his production as a playmaker, absolutely, I say go Lonnie. I would sway slightly. I don't have a problem with any of the three of them. They're all upgrades from the three veterans the Sixers have right now, but I would probably lean in the direction of Smith Jr. I just prefer his athleticism really as an attribute over anything Fultz can do. I think they're similar enough as facilitators and defenders, to where I would just prefer Smith's athleticism. So that would kind of be my very, very close ranked order. As I said, I would be happy with any of the three of them.
I think I would definitely go with Lonnie first, DSJ second, and Fultz third. But to kind of pivot from that, on our final segment, we want to preview the Sixers Wizards game. So obviously, the Wizards are 6-27. I believe that is the worst record in the league, and this is a winnable game regardless of if Paul George and Embiid are in the lineup or not. So I'll let you give your quick rundown.
So we're recording this on Tuesday night, so Wednesday night this game might already be played by the time you're watching this. If it's not, I guess we'll see what happens. If you already seen, I hope I'm right in saying the Sixers are going to win a meaningless basketball game for the who knows what time this season. Look, I'm staring at the 14-20 record the Sixers have right now, and if I mean that number just can't keep dropping. That's the reality of it, because there does come a point where you have to say, like, what is this season? If they Let's say they lose their next two games. They're 8 games below 500. I mean, that's unacceptable. And I could be wrong on this, but I think Brian Windhorst put out a report earlier talking about just like potential of major moves. And I think the Sixers, he said, with Daryl Morey, it's always possible. Look, I could be completely misquoting Windhorst here. I feel like I saw that on social media though. So if I did, I'm not against it. If things keep going south, if they lose this Wizards game and the game after, I think it's Golden State after that. I think that possible becomes very possible is what I'm saying.
Yeah, Windhorst pretty much just speculated that Daryl Morey's always been aggressive and he's not using the draft capital the Sixers have, the draft. Like, he's using it as trade ammunition. And he pretty much said if the Sixers don't make a move, it's not because Daryl Morey didn't try. Windhorst's been very reputable, so I'll take his word for it. But
Of
kind of
course,
pivot
yeah.
back to the game. Sixers, as you said, 14-20. But like I said earlier, like, even if the Sixers win by 35 points, it wouldn't move me whatsoever because the Wizards are simply that bad. And honestly, I think they'll win, but I don't think it'll be like a blowout. I think it'll be around the 12-point, 10-point victory margin range simply because the offense has been so suspect and Maxey as a number one option has been just not a good sight. And if Bilal Coulibaly is playing, then he's going to have a very hard time scoring against him because Bilal has proven to be really athletic, promising two-way wing with loads of potential. I think that storyline has been very underlooked because the Wizards have just simply been so bad. Alex
Sar's
Sarr
a
has
great
also improved a
defender
lot.
too.
So yeah, I mean, I think it's a game they win. Kelly Oubre will obviously fill it up as a second option, but obviously I'm honestly not too worried. But like I said, a win won't move me here. But if you lose to this Wizards team, I mean, it's regular season, it's January, but like, going 14-21 at this point, it's severely unideal, especially against a team like the Wizards. So it's not a must win for the Sixers, but at the same time, it kind of is for both morale and trying to, not fall too far from the 10th spot because at the end of the day, it makes more sense for them to reach the play-in than to try to tank because at this
Of
point, they're only
course.
6 games below. So I think regardless, they're going to finish out as a 10th seed no matter how the regular season goes. But still, it's just a game that you kind of want to put away quickly because if you kind of give a young, energetic team any wiggle room, they'll make it a game till the end of the buzzer. So Sixers should handle business. This Wizards team is just truly not good on either end of the ball. They're approaching to be one of the worst teams of the 2020 so far. So yeah, handle business. Don't make anything out of it. I expect better decision-making from Maxey. I expect aggression from Oubre. I expect Yabusele to drive in that pick-and-pop role. I expect Caleb Martin to, have a field day as a perimeter defender. So should be easy, but you never know with this team.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I'll leave everybody on this note. The Sixers beat the Nets the other day by 29 points. The good news in that is the Nets are a better team than the Wizards. Not by much, but they are. And the bad news is that Joel Embiid and Paul George played in that game and had good games. So, look, tomorrow night, let's just hope they walk away with a win, go to 15 and 20. But with all that being said, thank you all very much for watching the third episode. Stay tuned for hopefully some guest-filled episodes coming soon. And yeah.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.